And of course, we're going to take your phone calls this hour with John Hogue when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Now, John, with predictions, are you allowed to change your mind before things are about to occur? So before the election, can you say, well, I'm going to pick somebody else?
Well, looking in the past, giving an example, yeah, that is possible. One thing I did in the, for years I was saying Hillary Clinton was going to be president.
Right. I remember that.
But a year before the primaries, a little less than a year before the primaries, and it's documented, I think, 3rd of March, 2007, I began to see one weak link in that destiny. And I wrote an article that's still at HogueProphecy.com in the archives called Hillary Clinton's Albatross, talking about the rhyme of the ancient sea mariner. And basically, a long story short, it's a man who gave bad luck to the crew and the ship by killing an albatross unconsciously. And they ended up draping it, tying it around his neck as the ship became kind of like the Flying Dutchman. It was a ghost ship. And one of the Romantic era's great poems. Well, it's the term now, carrying an albatross around your neck, is like you did something that, and in her case was, I said the one thing that would cause her not to win the presidency, which she was destined to win, was not handling the Iraq vote, where she kind of quickly voted in favor of George Bush's invasion of Iraq. And that would come to haunt her because I predicted that Barack Obama would be making a run. It would be a very close election between Democratic candidates. And with the anti-war vote tilting in his favor, if she couldn't explain why that was a good decision, that it would be just enough to tilt her out of the primaries. But what I also said is that I could not shake this important team that they were going to be, a dream team of him and her. I misinterpreted it to be vice president. Even when he didn't take her as vice president, I just couldn't shake this feeling that she was going to be of an important nature in his candidacy and his presidency, and then she became Secretary of State. That even surprised her. It came out of the blue. So the thing is, one of the things that could, and I talk about this potential, the weak link in Obama being reelected, would be somehow his perception as being the adult in the crowd of kids has to happen this year, which is his third year, just like Lincoln's third year began the turning of the tide of his rather disastrous presidency until he started turning the tide in 1863. And I see a lot of karmic parallels to Lincoln and Obama, and it's possible that he might turn the tide, but it's not going to be from the economy. It's a perception of being a leader. Well,
no. Yeah, you're right. Something dramatic could happen.
Yeah, there are things that are coming. Well, we just talked a little bit about the potentials in September. You know, if George Bush had not had 9/11, all the papers at that time, a month before, were talking about him being a very forgettable single-term president.
Right.
But 9/11 redefined his presidency. And I think there are going to be, between now and the election, there are going to be several things happening where if Obama can redefine himself in the perception of the American people, even if he finds a way to redefine himself as the man who's finally fighting for people and trying to make the jobs happen and they keep getting thrown back in his face by Congress, I think he's going to play the game of it's me against Congress. He's going to become the third party. Because the president is a third, more third than the other thirds, powerful part of the three-tiered democracy we have here. And if he galvanizes himself as the Republicans, Democrats, and the party of Obama, then you see that third-party movement actually being Barack Obama's 8 million people, if he can get them interested in what he's doing again.
We shall see that switch. But so you're not changing yet?
No, I don't see a change. And the it's really, I see more, it's not that Obama succeeds, it's that the opposition shoots their foot off.
Yeah, and doesn't work. And one more thing before we go to calls. Had 9/11 not occurred, we wouldn't be in Afghanistan or Iraq. We wouldn't be having all these other problems at airports and security. Or would we, John?
You know, if Al Gore had not only won the popular vote, but the Electoral College, he would have probably, there are certain things that just happen, whoever's there, certain patterns in history just happen. They may be delayed a little, or they may be hastened quicker, but they happen whether it was a Democrat or a Republican. Now, the question is, what would have Al Gore done? Would he have gotten into Afghanistan 10 years? Would he have even invaded Iraq? I don't think so. So with the same events before him, he might have made different decisions, which might have, of course, taken
altered the course of destiny.
And I don't rule out a run for Al Gore in 2016. That's I'll put out there. He could actually run again. I wrote about it back in 2006 or 2007. I said from the new Nixon to the new Gore. And I talked about this potential of him kind of getting the term that was denied him, which would then fulfill the curse of Tecumseh in an odd way.
Oh, we shall see, John, if history intervenes, huh?
Yes, we'll see.
Let's take some calls. The hour goes by quickly. We're with John Hogue. Let's go to Dominic in Westbrook, Maine on the wild card. Nope, he's not ready yet. Let's go to John in Palm Springs, California. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Listen, I saw something that really shocked me a few months ago, and I saw a banner on CNN that said the Vatican came out, the Pope Benedict came out and said the Jews did not kill Jesus Christ. Now I thought to myself that was really shocking because I also heard from a guest on Coast to Coast one night that there's a whole new thing happening with the Piscean because Jesus Christ represented the Piscean era and now that's gone and the Age of Aquarius is coming in. So are they trying to rewrite the gospel and re-edit things out? Is that it? Can you tell me something? Can you, you know?
Well, first off, the first symbol of Christianity was a sign of the fish, the fisherman. The fisher of souls, which I find very intriguing because around the time Jesus Christ's ministry happened was around the time of the Age of Aries, you know, the Age of Alexander the Great and Rome and war, going to the wayside in a more mysterious existential seeking of the truth of religion started coming in with the mysterious Piscean Age. And he was the fish man. He was even foretold as the fish man. In some earlier prophecies. So the question to ask, this is one of the hardest things for all of us to deal with, is that whatever we're brought up with, we are kind of hot-wired to think that, for instance, that the democracy that we have, that's the alpha and omega. Nothing's ever going to change. Nothing's ever going to be better than democracy. Or you grow up with certain religion, or you adopt a certain religion, converted to it at that time. You think, this is it. This is the end result. This is the last prophet, the only begotten Son of God, the only Buddha, and all of that. But if you look back at the patterns of history, of our long evolution, you will find that before there was a Jesus, there was a mainstream religion of Isis, there was Sol Invictus, there were these different religions that we currently call cults, but they were not cults. They were major religions. And they disappeared or they changed over time. So what I've learned from the study of prophecy is that this is not going to stop changing. We evolve our spirit, our teachers, as much as we evolve our technology and other things. And the Aquarian Age is going to take religion in a different direction than the Piscean Age, which was dominated by Jesus, or at least what has survived of Jesus' ministry. I mean, one of the things that's quite remarkable about it is that maybe what will happen with Christianity is it will return to its pre-Roman transformation. Rome was famous for taking religions and Romanizing them. And for some reason, the dogma of today doesn't think that happened to Christianity, but it did. I mean, the fact that we call this man, the Son of God, Jesus Christ, is not the name that he walked the earth with. His name was Yeshua. And because Rome Romanized him with a Greco-Roman name, Jesus Christos, as they Romanized many other religions to change things. So maybe what will happen, and I feel what will happen in the future of Christianity in the Aquarian Age, is going back to basics, and it might rediscover Yeshua and kind of see the truth of that beyond the Romanization.
All right, let's go. We're covering a lot of ground here with John Hogue. Let's go to Galadriel in Woodby Island, Washington. Hey there. Hi.
Hi, George, and hi, John.
Hi.
My question is the island safe?
Well, it depends on what part of the island you're on. If you're at sea level, and if you're on the Admiralty Inlet, if there's a subduction zone quake, which my forecast for the potential window for a subduction zone quake here in the Pacific Northwest where I live, we have almost an identical looking fault line that you see off of Bandar Aceh in Indonesia, which had the great quake on Boxing Day 2004 in the tsunami across the Indian Ocean.
Right.
Now, if I live on an island, I always try to be at least 40 feet above sea level in this area, because if there's a quake, then you're looking at, in 40 minutes' time perhaps, a wave that large coming down through the Puget Sound and curling around Whidbey Island and coming around to the northern end of the island, probably be about 8 to 16 feet high. And I corroborated this. A friend of mine who's my neighbor around here is Drew Campion, who's the editor of Surfer Magazine. One day, there's a lot of writers where I live, and one day we were figuring it out, what would be the wave if it came through the Puget Sound area with our island here. And we actually found out that our calculations of the surf size was what the Washington scientists also believed would happen. So to answer your question, if you're in Max Walton Beach...
Well, I'm on the north end.
Okay.
Kind of close to the base.
Okay, well, the thing about any island or any coastal area, I mean, is if you're at sea level, you know, it's and you're... 50 miles, 60, 70 miles out to sea is the subduction zone, then, you know, you are vulnerable. Although I have felt that if there was a big subduction zone quake, it was going to hit more towards the mouth of the Columbia River or farther south, and it will probably parallel the great eclipse that's going to come in 2018 that's actually going to cross over south of Portland through the subduction zone, turn down towards the New Madrid area of Missouri. The shadow passes over that. It's another seismically active area of America, and go out the Atlantic at Charleston, which is the third seismically active area. And what I have studied over the years, and we've talked about this over the years on the show, is that there seems to be this strange pattern where 18 months or so after an eclipse shadow passes over a certain region, there can be earthquakes in those regions. So we're having one that's going to, in a few hours, cross over all three major seismic areas of the United States, and I wonder what that is going to trigger in the next 18 months. So basically, we could have the quakes that I see that everybody up here in the Seattle area is waiting for is still about 7 years away.
Yeah, that's good, because Stuart Wilde once predicted one of our guests, a big one for that region, too. It never happened yet.
Well, we are overdue, and I've certainly, living up here in the Northwest, I was originally born in Hollywood, California, so,
yeah.
So I also been in seismic zones all my life, and I, you know, survived the Sylmar quake in 71 and all that, but, so I've been in big quakes. They're infrequent, but in the 17th century, there was a massive one that you can still see the effects around here, and it sent a tsunami across to Japan, killed 50,000 people back then. We know it happened in 1700 because of Japanese records. So if it doesn't happen in the final 3 years of this decade, it's probably not going to happen in our lifetime, but... that is something I started seeing just this year, and I wrote some articles about it at hogprophecy.com. Hopefully wrong, but that's the
Yeah, you got a pretty high accuracy rate though, John.
Unfortunately with earthquakes, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, we're animals. We're just talking animals.
That's right.
Actually, everybody, if you watch the animals and if you watch your own energies, you can actually feel the electromagnetic things that make you sense something's coming, and I've done it. And usually what happens is it reaches a certain point, and when it stops, that's when the quake starts, about an hour or so after. So if you see me running around like a crazy animal, then...
you know something. heading for the hills.
Foaming at the mouth, yeah, running to the hills, flying off. Well, then that's...
are you still providing the e-books?
Oh, yes. Actually, since Nostradamus, The Life and Myth, that was the last physical book I wrote. As a futurist, I followed the trend early and started writing about 8 or 9 books since then have all been electronic books. And I'm going to have my predictions for 2012, which will look at the year. I also am finishing up a book on Nostradamus and 2012, and hopefully we'll have both those out around the Christmas time.
Okay, great timing. John, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we will take final phone calls with John Hoag as we talk about predictions for 2011 and beyond. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM, and if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, we've got some real science for you. Dr. John Brandenburg joins us beyond Einstein's unified field, so get ready for that. When we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we'll take final phone calls with John Hoag as we talk about predictions. John, can we track Hopi prophecy and see how accurate it has been before we even worry about what might be?
Well, there's a problem with all oral traditions, is that it really is based on trust.
Mm-hmm.
That the oral tradition, conversational as it is, doesn't embellish or garnish its prophecies over the years. So I often, strangely enough, the older the early entries of predictions are, the more I respect them, because it's just like what happened with Close Encounters of the Third Kind, UFO contacts. I mean, when it became part of the collective myth or imagination, everybody started seeing it a certain way, which kind of biased it. But if you like, with my favorite early book about contact with aliens is Robert Fuller's Interrupted Journey.
Yes, great story.
That is a great story because it was done as a hypnotic trance session by somebody who had no investment or even interest in UFOs. It wasn't even a topic. He was just a psychiatrist trying to help people who were having Barney and Betty Hill, who were having a problem about missing time. And he didn't really believe it was a true story or not. He just thought, well, this thing is going on in their mind and that they were abducted. It was only later with the documented evidence of their transcripts showed certain things that, like the star chart that Betty Hill drew, that when it was reversed years later, it actually shows that there were stars that we later discovered. These things, to me, I go back to the early things. I as much as I'm intrigued and read everything that's coming in UFOs or in Hopi prophecy, I mean, there's a lot of people now saying they're expressing the Hopi prophecy, and it's happening also with Mayan shamans. Again and again, people are saying, okay, here's the big message. This is what's going to happen. Oftentimes, that's very inaccurate because it's less a prophecy and more caught up in the social imaginative smog of everybody's projections.
Okay, let's take some final calls here. Jeff in Ferguson, Missouri. There you go, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, George. We got one last bit of heat coming in before it goes away.
Just when I come in.
That's yeah. Cool. And first, John, it's a pleasure speaking with you again. I spoke to you a couple times back, and I remember you from the NBC series of the Ancient Prophecy specials.
Yes.
And I guess I had a different comment, but I was thinking about this while I was on hold. What are the possibilities that the Operation Fast and Furious could affect Obama's reelection? And number two, could this new tattoo chip have any connection to the health care law? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Okay.
I just don't read anything into it, really. I don't think it has much of an effect. I just don't get anything, sorry.
And that's what, the tattoo chip or both?
In both, in regards to how it affects Obama's future. I think, you know, there's a battle going on between two sides of Politicorp. You know, there is big business that supported the Obama administration being there, and there's big business that is fighting. You know, I was saying earlier about how the aristocracies of 250 years ago, when last time Pluto was transiting Capricorn, created the middle classes that created the era and century of revolutions that created the modern world and modern democracies, starting with the American Revolution, French, and others. And it was a struggle between an emergent middle class that was trying to be controlled by an aristocracy. And the aristocracy was not uniform in its design or its plan. They were competing for dominance as well. And I make the point in predictions for 2011 that we have a new aristocracy, which is actually playing Obama and his opponents like chessboard figurines in something bigger than the political situation. I mean, I said long ago that when Obama became president, the liberals who thought that he was their guy were going to be very, very disappointed when they find out that he's really more a Reagan Republican than a Russ Feingold Democrat.
That's true. That is true.
And that happened.
Next up, I'm sorry, John.
Go ahead. No, okay. let's move.
Ed, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ed.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
Morning, John.
Morning, Ed.
There's a debate going on in the Middle East right now about Jordan being Palestine. There's 4 million Palestinians in Jordan. And when the British were there in 1917 and created a territory called Palestine, they carved out Jordan and present-day Israel in the West Bank as one state of the future state for the Jews, named Palestine, incidentally. When you said earlier that the East Bank of the eastern part of Palestine is the West Bank, I kind of beg to differ with that, but that's, you know, conjectural. Is there going to be something with Nostradamus and with your own oracles? Is there anything in Nostradamus's oracles about Israel in current history and how it matches in prophecy with Ezekiel 38, et cetera?
Yeah, there's because Nostradamus was born Jewish and used a lot of Jewish mysticism. His view, he actually foresaw the Holocaust and used a term Irale for as an anagram for Israel, and talked about the people being burned to smoke and ash. And he also talked about at the time of the end of the century of the sun, that he talked about Israel winning the Six-Day War and making peace with its neighbors. But he also talked about a great war and conflict happening from people having disagreement about lands there. So it's interesting you talk about the whole Jordanian issue, because it often, in my own personal bias, I always feel like the logical idea is to amalgamate Jordan, since it already is a shared country between Palestinians and Hashemites. Even Queen Reina is Palestinian, and the Hashemite king of Jordan is Hashemite. It doesn't matter what you and I think about that. The reality is that the Palestinian state is probably going to be voted into existence in this split east-west Pakistan idea, which is untenable, really. And that's the property, because Jordan, King Hussein, before his son relinquished the West Bank to this process, and I don't think it's going to be reincorporated into Jordan, although I think there's more logic to that, but that's my bias.
All right, it's James Turner in Topeka, Kansas. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
All is well, thanks.
I wanted to see, it seems that the income tax has been a big control point of the government and used as a tool to control. I was wondering if you thought we would ever move to a consumption-based tax or a fair tax or flat tax.
Gosh, I would hope so. What do you think, John?
Well, in predictions for 2011, I said this was the one area where strange bedfellows of politics, Tea Party and left and right, could actually come to some kind of positive solution, a simplification of the tax code. And it's interesting that in all the Watsington riots, if I call Washington, D.C. after Watts, which had a South Central L.A. had a big riot, couple riots, and then it's talking about the riotousness of politics in this year, that was one of the areas where some common ground could be potentially met. And I think we are going to see a reform of the tax code to something more simple and fair. I think the pressure is on now, and I think one way or another, Democrats or Republicans or a third party are going to make that happen.
All right, whose turn? It's Mill Creek, Washington we go, and it's Mel on Coast to Coast. Hey, Mel, thanks for holding.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend that's she's a cousin to Princess Diane that's very telepathic. She has much information to share with the public, but it has to be transcribed into English. And her email address is Time Traveler.
Well, hold on. We don't give out somebody else's email on the air.
Well, it's for her to get the information of anyone who wants to share in the call.
We'll put you on hold, and you can give it to Tom, because whoever that may be will get thousands of emails. Speaking of emails, John, do you get money?
Oh, I mean, yes, I concur. You will get thousands of emails.
They keep rolling in. All right, Jeff in Juneau, Alaska, your turn, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Greetings.
Hi.
John, I just want to tell you that I really appreciate what I hear in you, that you don't sacrifice what you see. You don't make it look like what you want to see. I really think that that's trustworthy. I just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
I have so many things that I would like to talk about, but there's not time. All the political things, all of the earth changes, all the general fears that people have, is it safe where I live and all that. You get bombarded with those questions wherever you go, I'm sure. But, just get a feel for you. I wanted to make sure that I'm understanding what you said when you brought up the 2012 thing about how it's not a significant deal in the quatrains, or I think that's what you were saying.
What I said is that I have found in 30 years of studying Nostradamus absolutely no connection that he makes to 2012.
Right, right.
But he makes a connection to the year 1999, which sounds very much in the way he talks about it as pivotal to the change of the engines of centuries. What that was the 2012, and then I find out, if you look at JPL calculations, that really was the galactic alignment back in 98, 99. So right. I go, well, I think Nostradamus maybe had it right.
Well, here's,
the 2012
here's...
thing is a wild goose chase up a Mayan pyramid, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I've experienced in the last 8 years, I've just seen in my own life, it's like there's this influx of supernatural awakening. And it's not just me. And it's got to do with this energy that's coming from the center of the galaxy. And how do you square with people like David Wilcox and like the guest last night, Mr. Torrey, I believe it was. Is that right,
Dr. Torrey, yeah.
Louis Torrey, yeah.
Do you agree that we're evolving? I mean, because I really think that is the issue here. And that's the reason why the pyramids, the Great Pyramid at Giza, stops at 2012 the same way the Mayan calendar stops at 2012. It isn't because the guy got tired and stopped chipping on the calendar. It's for a reason. It's because, you know, there's a thing going on. And I think all of these problems and all these upheavals and all these social things and all these physical events that have people so fearful, I believe it's going to be solved because we're going to evolve.
Here's the answer, time to answer your comments. Thanks for your heartful sharing of it, and it is a good question to ask. But the thing that I understand about consciousness is that instinct evolves collectively, but consciousness evolves one individual at a time. Now, if enough individuals awaken, that may alter the collective, but you know, I'm just going to bear witness to this time. This is going to be a recorded, taped interview that people will be listening to for years, and I'm going to tell you that 2012 is going to come and go, and it's going to be as forgotten as the time, the end all, you know, pyramids pointing to this and that. All that has come before. We've seen that in 2000. We've seen it in other periods. The 2012, when 2013 comes around, and 2014 and 2015, what you're going to see is a greater intensity of the need to make those evolutionary jumps of individuals into consciousness, because the predictable way we're going, it is not – a lot of this idea that the consciousness is lifting in the world is an illusion. Because consciousness doesn't lift collectively. It lifts it all that matters is your insignificance, your inward significance. It doesn't matter whether the person next to you is awakening or not. And it requires your availability. It's not just something that can come in the air like a drug and change you. In fact, a lot of that people think is consciousness is just another trick of their minds being religious now rather than not being religious. The future of consciousness in the Aquarian age is more scientific rather than faith-based. Where prayer was dominant in the Piscean age, the Aquarian age is going to be the science of self-observation. The seeker becomes a subjective scientist. He measures through his awareness the passing of his mind, his thoughts, his emotions, and comes to understand through a unique experience of meditation that he is not the mind, he is not the emotions, he is not the projections of his society and the biases of his times. He is a mystery, or she is a mystery, that the deeper you go into, the less you know what it is, but the more intimately one you become with it, and it permeates everything. That is the future, and it's not the idea that a certain date, a certain calendar is pointing to a point where everybody has laughing gas, collective enlightenment has never happened, will never happen. That is a distraction from the real work.
That's going to be a December 21st date of next year when we shall see. Thanks, John Hoag. For David Bujinski, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.